Okay, so now we are refreshed and back. And I wanted to talk with you also then about the brick and mortar shop. So you did buy Tony Eng's place, and that's what I was talking about as far as the future of wanting to continue to do tours. You know, I really don't see, it used to be that a lot of people were doing, of course, phone room tours and those kinds of things here in the U.S. I don't see or hear that much of that. I know that they're still going on around.
I think there's still some. Sure.
Certainly there are. But the same thing with brick and mortar shops. There are getting to be fewer and fewer of those with the advent of the internet and being able to purchase things at a cheaper price. And I'm sure that you have people who come into your shop and they compare prices on the spot. You know, just like you can
with
walk in.
With a cell phone now?
Cell phone, you can go into the grocery store and scan something, or if you're going into any department store and you look at a suit or a dress or whatever that you're wanting to buy, then you look and you can compare that immediately of whether that, okay, where's the cheapest place in this area that I can go and purchase that, you know, kind of a thing. So it over the years, as long as I have been going to Magic Shops, well before the internet, it used to be that they would be selling costumes and adult novelties and things in order to try. That was really the bread and butter, and Magic was kind of like lagniappe, which we'd call, lagniappe means extra something, you know, it's
okay.
Louisiana Cajun term, but anyhow, that Magic was kind of a byproduct that the owner may have had a passion for wanting to sell Magic, but they couldn't make a living selling exclusively Magic. The only one I know of that has been, a couple, I guess I should say, has been Denny Haney with Denny and Lee's, Denny's Magic Shop, of course, Joe Stevens Emporium, and there's probably been a few other exceptions, you know.
Mickey Hattie's International.
Mickey Hattie's, yes, that's a good one up there. Midwest Magic up in Chicago. Again, there are a few exceptions that just sell Magic only and make a career and living out of that, but I've got to think that it's being... that they're making less and less, you know, on that.
Yes.
So I'm getting to you to see your perspective as a Magic dealer and an international Magic dealer being in Canada. If you have a lot of people who, I understand that your shop is in a high traffic tourist area. If you then have a lot of people who are coming in wanting to buy this, a secret, just give me your
first of all, I should say a couple of things. Number one, I had no desire to own a Magic shop. It was a moment of stupidity. No, the fact is, first of all, I grew up with a great Magic shop. Mickey Hattie's. First of all, it was Magic only, and it wasn't. It was nowhere near anything. It was not a. It was a farmhouse on the outskirts of Calgary.
Wow. So it wasn't like in a downtown strip mall or
it what you had there. To want to go there. I rode my bike there once. It took me 6 hours.
Wait. You rode your bike for six hours?
Now understand, I was not a real bike rider. I think if I was a hardcore bike rider, it would have been quicker. But I was only like 15.
And your parents let you take a 6 hour bike ride?
I don't think they thought about it much. I'm not even sure I told them. But
oh, my gosh.
Anyway, it was way out by the airport, and the airport is always out on the outskirts of town somewhere.
Well, it's not a six-hour bike. 6 hours? Are you serious?
From where I lived, six hours round trip.
Okay, but even
but that's
so.
That's 3 hours out there Gee, and 3 hours
Christmas.
Back.
Okay.
It hurt. The next day,
your butt had.
Oh, man.
I've ridden, like, one day. I drove 120 miles on my bike, and so I know it can hurt the old seat.
It was tough. Anyway, I grew up with a great shop. It was strictly Magic, and Mickey was awesome. At the time, I wasn't thrilled with it, but he would do things like, I went in there once, I was probably 15, and I said, I want that. And it was a thing I had coveted for years. It was a beautiful wrist chopper.
Sure.
And I said, I want that. And he said, no. I said, no. It's $65. I have $65 right here. I saved up.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, but you know what? That trick works itself. I mean, it works itself. And you're not going to learn anything about Magic. And it will get a reaction because putting a thing through someone's hand, you know, that's going to get a reaction.
Sure.
But it's a reaction without actually building a routine.
And you were how old at the time?
Probably 15.
Okay.
He said, I think it's that's something you wait for until you're ready to take on. How do I explain? It's like Kevin James' bowling ball.
Yeah.
Kevin James' bowling ball is a wonderful effect.
It is.
I do it.
I do it.
I own it.
I own it.
Here's the thing, though. I don't care if it's you or me or someone else, with very, very few exceptions. I've got a couple of friends that have come up with some wonderful bits of business with it. But for most people, it's going to be the same basic routine, the same basic effect. Mm-hmm. It doesn't teach you anything. So,
I've got some touches on it.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah.
I haven't seen
Rather than using a bowling ball, I use something else.
Okay. I've seen some great ones. Chris Mitchell out of LA.
Yep, Chris Mitchell.
He's got a
He's
great,
very clever guy. Yes, he does.
Switch up on that. Eric Buss.
Yeah, Eric
great
does.
Switch up.
Yep.
I'm not going to blow them here.
Right, no,
talking,
no, of course. But I've seen them. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, but most people do it pretty standard.
Yeah.
So
sure, you buy the trick, and I mean, it's like any trick, like the hand chopper, like you're saying, you're going to take it, you're going to do it. It's the same thing, like when you buy even a close-up trick, it would have suggested patter, and it's not just suggested; that's what is actually ended up being used
yes.
over and over and over, and with no thought of any personal
totally.
Presentation.
So all Mickey was saying was, you would be better off instead of getting this one, buy this trick,
put your money in
get
this
thing here, that over there, and this. It's going to cost less than the 65 mm-hmm. altogether. So he was going to make less, but it's going to make you work harder. It's going to make you routine something that actually works. It's not going to be something that's pretty much
self-working in a way.
Self-working
yeah.
works on its own. The routine is obvious. You're going to have to work harder, and it's going to make you a better magician.
Wow.
And he actually told me no, and he wouldn't sell it to me. And it was several years before I got a wrist chopper, and by that point I was able to take it and make it a really good routine.
Put a presentation to
instead
it.
Of just going with the basics of it, because mm-hmm. they're going to work anyway.
Standard lines,
you know?
Right.
So Mickey was great that way. So also the other thing that was great about Mickey's back then, I did work for Mickey's when I was in my teens, and at that point it was being managed by a guy named John Kaplan. John mm-hmm. Is now a well-known professional magician in Canada, and he was actually the first guy I ever saw do magic, because my mom hired him to do my little brother's birthday, and he was. I said that Don, the 65-year-old in Dinalda, was my first mentor.
Right.
John was my first real teacher, and I was 10. He was like 13, 14, and. I will never forget that day. That was the day I was exposed to magic. And so that was my start. And John became the first guy who started teaching me magic and teaching me about it. We became very good friends. Hmm. And I learned an awful lot from him. Anyway, now cut to, I've been touring the world for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And we get to Victoria, my wife and I. And we sit down for lunch with Tony. He takes us out for lunch, and he says, we're going to shut down the shop because we've been trying to sell it for a couple of years. We're retiring. They've had it for 20 years. And
you're thinking,
if you don't buy it,
I got the cash, I could do that.
We're shutting down.
Oh, wow.
So, it literally came to that. He was pushing, man. He was really pushing. And I said, Tony, I don't want to buy a magic shop. And he said, no, but you could live here. And then I kind of went,
It's nice and warm. Yeah.
no snow. We don't have to shovel rain because it does get a lot of rain. It's like Seattle. Mm-hmm. But he said, think about it. And so Teresa and I we actually talked to another friend the next day. And that friend.
Did he own a magic shop?
No, he didn't.
So he didn't have experience.
But when
go buy a magic shop.
But he said, hey, when are you going to buy it?
Because I want to come and buy stuff from you.
Sure. And so then we're driving away from the island the following day, and we're actually in the middle of a tour, not the big tour.
Okay.
I did a number of other tours, similar ideas, but very small scale, low budget, and
variety?
Sometimes magic variety, yeah.
Yep.
sometimes done by some of the sleazier telemarketers in the business. And that particular one was awful. It was a terrible tour. We got paid.
Why was it bad? I mean, just didn't have an audience?
No audience. You're setting up for hours. For
waiting.
12 people.
Yeah.
You know?
I've done it.
It's awful. It's there's financial satisfaction, but there is no, there is zero artistic satisfaction.
I understand.
And I finally, here we are with Tony, and, you know, he's offering us this other thing. We're driving away the next 2 days later. We are on a, you know, 7 hour, 8 hour drive up to a small town to do yet another awful show for no audience. And we started talking and saying, you know, I guess it wouldn't be terrible to be in a, you know, be in this lovely place.
Sure.
And doing that instead of...
Have a base of operations, a headquarters, so you wouldn't have to keep traveling
and
all the time.
You know, make a little bit of money doing that instead of doing this awful, crappy show that...
So the timing was perfect as far as him asking you.
Had he asked us any other time, we would have said no.
Yeah.
But what I finally said was, well, why don't we at least ask him what he wants? Because I had a number in my head that I was sure that that's what the shop was going to cost.
Sure.
So I sent him a note. Said, well, okay, we'll just, what do you want for it? At least we'll ask. And that way, I figured that we'd be able to look at that number and go, oh, there's no way we could afford that, so no, we can't do it. Well, he sent the email back, and it was exactly half of what I thought.
And you're thinking, oh, boy.
And both Teresa and I looked at it and went, oh.
Yeah.
Darn. I cleaned that up for everyone.
Thank you.
And, no, we said a nasty word, and because now all of a sudden we had to actually consider it. And so by the time we got home a week later, we had decided to buy a magic shop.
Do you think he was undercutting that just because it was like, if you don't take it, I'm going to have to start selling this off in pieces and...
It could have been. I don't know that.
Who knows?
He's passed away now, and so I have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
But it was... I've never bought
a retail
store.
Now, Julie didn't want it, I guess, though. Julie Yang, his daughter.
But Julie was still in the startup phase of her life, her career in Toronto, which is the entire other side of the country.
Why'd she decide to go there, I wonder?
I don't know. I think she just wanted to try. Let's face it. I don't know what it's like here. But Victoria's a small town. It's 300,000 people. Small city. Tony had the magic shop. Tony also, at some point in his life, decided that instead of touring all over the world and always being away from home, that he was going to be Victoria's guy. And so for him...
It was kind of like with Denny Haney. You know, he was doing all these college circuits shows, and he decided, I think I'll buy a brick and mortar shop because I think that the college circuit's about to die. Because I talked with him about that, and he said later...
Really?
Yeah, because he said, I should have stuck around because the college circuit, you know, has continued to thrive, and I should have stuck there. And he said, the brick and mortar is starting to die off. And he said, I made a bad decision. However, you know, he's 100% behind it, and it is just... He's one of the best guys.
I've heard nothing but great about Denny. Yeah. But no, Tony, he really focused on, number one, he loved close-up.
Yeah.
So he wanted to do primarily close-up. And I'm guessing on some of this stuff, but he was more a close-up guy, although he did some great stage stuff. And so he became the king of Victoria.
He was doing everything. He was the magician.
You talk to anyone, even now, in Victoria.
Yeah.
He did everyone's birthday party. You saw him either at your birthday party,
bar mitzvah,
your elementary school, your bar mitzvah, your company Christmas party. Everybody in Victoria knew Tony. He was the king of Victoria. Everyone knows him. And so, you know, he had this long and wonderful career there.
But he stayed there pretty much in Victoria. I mean, in other words, unlike you, who toured the country, he stayed in...
He was a 40-miler. Now, having said that, he did a lecture tour across Canada. He also... that tour that I didn't like very much that ended up being the one that I bought his shop because of, there was a time a dozen years before
that
where it was a little better of a tour at that point, and I actually... started getting a lot of calls. I was doing that tour for like 15 years. That was more like January, February every year. And it was small town Western Canada. No big tour bus. It was just me and Teresa and another act and my van and a trailer. And we loaded in and out the gear and we didn't have a sound man or a light man. It was us.
Yeah.
At some point, I started getting cruise ships. Teresa and I were offered, you know, cruise ships, and we did that for a number of years. And so for a couple of years, we gave that tour to Tony.
Mm-hmm.
So he did do some touring. He did do, you know, he
stage was at, act on the cruise?
Yep. Mm-hmm. No, the land tour.
Oh.
He also was at Fector's every year. I mean, he
that's where
he definitely was outside of... Yeah. Yeah, you met him there. He was outside of Victoria and doing some good stuff, but primarily... He was a 40-miler who also, the shop was his business card.
Sure. He was a big fish in a small pond.
Absolutely. And he was really successful at it. So, you know, it was not a bad way to go. He accomplished a great deal, and he influenced so many people. Mm-hmm. And even today, I get people that come into the shop going, oh, my God. We are from California, and we were here 15 years ago, and this shop was one of the highlights of our time, and Tony, where's
great.
Tony?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, sadly...
That's bad news. Yeah.
Yeah, Tony's not around anymore.
Yeah.
But he touched many people. So, we buy the shop, and I have been thrilled to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's been...
That legacy.
Absolutely.
So you kind of feel bad if you're going to, at some point, think this is just not going to continue.
Well, I'm just being realistic about the magic world in general. The fact is a lot of shops, including Tony's Trick and Joke Shop, which is now Murray's Trick and Joke Shop, costumes were a huge part of many magic shops.
Sure.
During Halloween, they were the place you went for costumes and makeup and
right.
fake teeth and all that stuff. Now that has been almost entirely taken over by these pop-up Halloween stores that come into town, into every
weeks.
Town.
Yeah.
They come in for 5 or 6 weeks. They suck out the money with the lowest common denominator of costumes, and they're gone. Like November 2nd, they are gone. And it's sad.
Well, that's across the U.S. as well. I didn't know that was in Canada as well.
Oh, yeah. Too. And so... I understand it. I get it. You know, people have a limited budget and they want a costume and they can get it
right.
cheaper there because they have 30 locations
right.
or like Party City. Sorry, I shouldn't say a name, should I? well, what the hell? Party City on, you know, they've got 300 locations across the country. They can obviously offer pricing that a mom and pop magic
shop.
Well,
because of bulk, you know,
can't match.
Same thing with Walmart or any of the, you know, the big box stores, you know, can buy in bulk and have a better price.
So the last, in Canada, in Victoria, the last 3 years, that's been a huge issue. But it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
Some longer than 3 years, some not as much, but it's happening everywhere. Then you've also got tourism and all of that stuff over the last couple of years. The world economy is screwed, you know? People are scared.
That's true.
It's starting to resolve.
In all industries.
But there have been years where the predictability of the tourism industry has been very questionable. So that's affecting shops like ours and most of the other magic shops around because you just don't have the summer season that you would have had 5, 8, 10 years ago.
Right.
So that's tough.
Now, you're having the people still coming into the tourist area.
Not necessarily.
No? So it's affecting everybody.
We're much down.
So it's not just magic. It's tourism in general as far as people coming in because they don't have the money to come in.
Sure. People are much more careful about
not
where
going to the restaurants.
Go.
Are you seeing bars and restaurants close as well?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. Victoria's, it's not like desperate right now.
Oh, no,
but,
I understand.
But... The reality is that you know, compared to what you saw even 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
which is in the middle of this recession, but 5 years ago, there were more people on the streets in downtown Victoria from other places, and now there's just not as many. So, you know, you gotta make that work. You gotta
sure.
figure that out. Then on top of that is the internet thing.
Yeah.
And it's sad because you grew up with magic shops.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with magic shops. There's a whole generation of kids now that, as we've talked a little bit about before we started recording, they are finding magic. They're discovering the world of magic and then finding magic to perform without ever experiencing magic shops or magic clubs or organizations like IBM SAM. And it's troubling because it's like they're missing out on this whole side of it.
Right. You know, whenever I first started going to magic shops, it was the camaraderie, you know, that I experienced and had so much fun and enjoyment with meeting people and sharing ideas outside of a magic club. I mean, the club's one thing, but a magic shop's different. It was the old-fashioned, what must have been known as the Cracker Barrel, as we would call it, you know, in the old general stores or whatever in cowboy days. Which you'd sit around and play dominoes or whatever. And so we'd go to the magic shop, and that you'd hang out. And other magicians would come in and say, "Hey, and they would show you what the newest magic trick is, and say, "Well, you know, it reminds me. So and so had this variation, or let me do this or that." And you'd just trade ideas. And it was a place that you would go to exchange ideas. Now, with the internet, of course, you have forums in which, but you have to type it, or you can perhaps do Skype or FaceTime or whatever in order to talk one-on-one, or perhaps conference with others or the Magic Cafe or other places where that you can exchange ideas. But it's not the same as being in front of a person and having that kind of personal relationship.
Having that immediate access to say, "Wait a minute,
yes,
what you just do there."
Right.
I do that differently. How did you do that?
Let me see your...
How are you holding your finger?
Hands, right.
You know, all of that. I am tremendously sad because I think the reality is that magic shops mostly are going to go away. I think there will be some.
Dingbat may you never see, or Ding Bang, what's
Ding
his
bang.
Name? Ding Bang. Ding Bang.
Oh, God, Ding Bang. Teresa's going to kill me for that.
Ding Bang may never know a magic shop.
But no, and he might not. I think, like I say, I think some of the really big ones that carry everything will survive because, let's face it, there's times you need a something. And if you can know that you're going to go there and it's going to be there, I think that's possible. But it's gotten to a point. I mean, I've seen it in my shop. Guys come into the shop and they say, "What have you got that's new or that we haven't seen?" You know what? As a pro, as a guy that's made a living for three decades as a magician, I think I have a little insight as to what's
a little
good.
Bit. Yeah.
What's really worthwhile. And no highly edited video on some flashy site is going to be able to, if I can put it this way, is going to give you better insight into whether or not that's worth purchasing.
Than having some personal relationship that you can...
Yeah, absolutely. A
interaction.
Shop where someone has seen thousands of products. I can only speak for my shop. I don't know what every magic shop does. But for me, there's times I get fooled. I go on a website, Murphy's or Fun Inc. or any of the wholesale sites.
Sure.
I go on there because I want to see what's new, what I can bring into my shop for my clientele.
Okay.
So I go in there and I see a highly edited video. Now, it's only from one angle.
Of course.
You're not seeing what's happening all around. So I bring this thing in. And it's a piece of crap.
Well, think about that. Years ago, they didn't even have that. You know.
I know.
You just had to take on a wing and a prayer.
But let me touch on that in a second. So you bring something in, and it's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Personally, I am going to number one, I don't bring in huge amounts to begin with. I don't bring in a dozen of something until I know what it is.
Right.
I bring in two or three, and I check it out. Once I know it's good, then I bring it back. If it's not good, I dump it. Mm-hmm. It either gets sold cheap or there's a couple of things I threw away because I'm not having someone walk out of my shop with that.
Yeah.
It's crap.
Yeah.
And That's not going to happen on the internet when you're dealing, for the most part. I'm not saying that all internet shops are not valuable or
ethical.
But generally, if they have it listed on their site, they're going to sell it. And you're not dealing with a person, you're dealing with a company. You're dealing with a website. And like you buy stuff on Amazon, there's no person there that's going to say, no, that prop isn't appropriate for you at this stage in your development.
Right. You're all just a cash transaction.
Totally. So, yeah. I don't mean any disrespect, but you know, the reality is. The other thing is that is saving $2 or $5 really worth losing that part of our world entirely? And the thing that people don't realize, yes, you know what? There's things you buy in my shop you can absolutely find cheaper on Amazon. Hell, I told you earlier.
Right.
I had someone in my lecture point out that something I was selling was available for cheaper on Amazon, I think it was. That's true. But on Amazon, they would not have just done 15 minutes of showing you an absolutely unique and original presentation with that piece of equipment and then explain the pros and cons of what's good and what's not about it. They just sell you a thing. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to turn around and go and buy it on Amazon but utilize all the information you've learned from me. Or, in the case of a magic shop, I've seen this happen. People walk into a shop. People walk into my shop.
Mm-hmm.
What's new? Here, look at this thing. I've checked it out. I've played with it. It's great. It's angle proof. It's this. It's that. Here's some ideas for routining.
Right.
Here's what I'm doing with it. And look how well that's made. Then you turn around and take the information I've just given you and basically go and buy the thing for $3 cheaper because you can get it shipped to you for $3 cheaper. And it's like, but wait a minute. You're discounting the value of everything you just learned from me in my shop.
Wow. I see what you're saying.
That's what we're losing.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
It's the personal instruction and also something that is custom made for you. So this evening that there was something that you had in your lecture that there was a that I think is not for everybody. There was a particular fellow in our club who bought this trick from you. And I said as he left, I said, I can see you performing that. And the funny thing was that there was another guy standing next to him, and I didn't say that to him because, you know, different people have a different personality. I can see this guy doing that trick that you sold him, but you sold this also to someone else that won't fit his personality. That'll go in his drawer.
Sure.
You know, he won't use
it. And that does happen.
Yeah.
But part of what a magic shop does for you, they may make you aware of things that aren't new but are great.
Right.
The item you're talking about, and I'm not going to discuss what it was right now, but that particular item has been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of unknown in the magic world. And so because I'm out here lecturing about it, all of a sudden people become aware of this wonderful little bit of magic. If they turn around now and run to somewhere else where they can maybe find it for
cheaper.
$2 cheaper, I don't think they will. But if they did, you would never have been aware of that product. Had I not brought it to you.
Exactly.
So is that not unfair that you then turn around and just try and find the product cheaper, but it's something you wouldn't have even known about? Yeah. And in the shop, that's what I do. I search for strong, strong magic. And it's not just stuff that's new on the market and hot and in all the magazines. Some of it is stuff that's been around but kind of forgotten or not really known well. Mm-hmm. And so there's a value in having that resource where you can go and find out, wow, there's some things I wasn't aware of that might suit me or fit my act. you lose the shops, you lose that resource.
There was something that someone had brought up in the lecture here this evening also. I'd forgotten exactly what it was, but he said something about where that you would, wouldn't this be available someplace else? Or, oh, darn it. And you said no, that you should be buying this from a reputable dealer.
Someone asked me about a particular product in the show or item that I demoed that isn't my item.
That's what it was, yes.
It was something that, actually it's the same item,
yeah,
that was invented a century ago or whenever.
Whenever.
And someone had discovered someone rediscovered this trick.
Okay.
And has put it on the market.
Right.
The reality is, I might be able to work it out and put it out myself. And that's what this guy said, is why don't you just put it out yourself? Because it wasn't this guy that invented it.
Right. It's been around forever.
Yeah. And I just said, well, wait a minute. No, I'm... why would I do that? He's the one who figured it out. He's the one that marketed it.
Right.
He makes it available to other shops to... distribute.
Yes, that you could do that, but you need to recognize the person who actually brought this.
Yeah, he brought it forward. Why would I take it from him?
Right.
I'm still making some money on it, selling it. I'm able to share it as a magician to other fellow magicians, and he's able to make some money off the fact that he put it out.
It's in recognition of the person's creativity who happened to have identified that. Just as you're saying, you're looking for things in your magic shop, Murray's Magic Shop, that you can bring to the public that they may not have otherwise recognized.
Or bring to magicians.
Magicians particularly, yeah, that they can now find something and they're thinking, oh, wow, I hadn't thought of that before. Or a presentation. Just we were talking about Sean Farquhar earlier, that before we started recording, about some ideas that he will come up with, that like all these poker chips. You know, he will have 20 minutes of ideas of you can do this or you can do this or you can do this. And it's like one of those things might happen to trigger your imagination saying, wow, that was a great idea. I wish I would have thought of that. I'll buy that because of that idea.
Totally.
And so you're paying for that idea. You know, you're not paying for the chips so much as it is, wow, that's a great idea.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that's kind of being lost in the magic world, is recognizing and basically paying for the privilege of the people that bring something forth, that give you an idea, that find, whether it's an old magic trick that they reintroduce, whether it's whatever, it's, I think those people deserve to some degree to be recognized
financially.
And to be financially reimbursed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I just feel like this whole thing of, well, I can get it cheaper there. Well, if that's all our business is about, I think it diminishes our business for sure. The magic world, it
does cheapen the art, if you will. You know,
it turns it to strictly a business transaction, and it's only about the money.
But do you think it's going that direction?
I think there's an element to that.
I mean, you're seeing people who are just saying, "I'm looking for the cheapest price."
Oh, for sure.
They just want the secret, and once they got the secret, you know, and they paid less than what they.
They want.
Could have otherwise gotten.
They, hey, let's face it. We're magicians. We like shiny stuff. We do.
Yeah,
like we like shiny things.
Ooh, look at that.
A, we can play. Yeah, exactly.
Finding Nemo. Yeah.
Yeah. They like shiny things, A, to play with, mm-hmm. and B, to put in their show. Mm-hmm. Now, what's happening now is, like I said, people come into the shop and what do you have? Well, here, have you thought about this? Oh, I haven't seen that.
But you know some of the people who come into your shop because you know them personally.
Oh, sure. I've seen
them. And you can say, hey, this will fit for you. You know, for an example,
absolutely.
Like Dick Hatch with H&R Magic, you know, would say to me, you know, when I go up to their bookshop, said, this book is for you because this will fit for your show, because Dick and I are one of the best friends, and so he knows me and I know him, and so he would recommend books, and I would, whatever he'd say, you know, that'd be fine. You know, because we know each other, and I think you have developed, that's an advantage of having a person with a brick-and-mortar shop who knows their customers, mm-hmm. to know what they need rather than what they want.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. And it just, but it really has come down to, you know, what do you got? Show it to me. Now look on my smartphone and, oh, I can get it $4 cheaper there.
Yeah.
And they do that. And it just, the reality is that there are companies out there that are online companies that have a very tiny little office in an industrial area in the middle of nowhere that they're not paying very much rent for.
Right.
They don't hire people who can actually demonstrate magic. They have warehouse people that can put it in boxes and ship it to you. I have, and many shops have locations in touristy areas where you're paying premium rent. You have every single staff member I have. I have four, Teresa and I have four people who work for us. Every one of them is a magician.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is one of the better magicians in Victoria. I mean, these are not just Joe Blows.
Oh, Magic Inc. is another one. You know, they've got really great magicians.
Absolutely.
You know, there.
So, yeah. And so
Chicago.
I'm paying for all of this so that you have a good experience when you come into the shop. It's not just about, that'll cost money. It's not just about having the cheapest, you mm-hmm. know. I can't make my rent cheaper. And so right. that rent is factored into
sure.
the price of what I sell.
Of course. It's not like you're trying to rip off people thinking, well, saying, you know, this Murray is one of the one percenters. He's one of the guys who's making money off of magicians. No, you're trying to pay your rent.
Oh, God, we're not making a dime. I don't think any magic shop is making any money nowadays. But the reality is, nowadays with the internet, all of the magic shops, back when I was a kid, even back when I first bought the magic shop, all of the shops pretty much set their pricing independently. There was a general rule, you know, here's the wholesale price.
Yes.
And we recommend X percentage over that wholesale
price. For retail.
For retail. But the shops had some leeway based on where you were, what it cost to get it to you,
right.
all of that stuff. Because I'm across an international border,
mm-hmm.
so they have to ship it up to me. The mailing is cheap or is more expensive
sure.
to get product to me than it is to get it to, you know, a shop in New
York,
for
right.
instance. Mm-hmm. So I pay higher shipping. Then I have to pay duty and taxes into Canada, and then there's exchange on the money.
Mm-hmm.
And which used to be much worse. Now it's pretty close. And so it used to be that shops in different places could vary by a few percentage points
right.
to account for that. Now you are all exactly the same, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage is the percentage, and that's what you charge. So any shops in Canada or anywhere else?
Same.
Automatically are making less than any U.S. shop because
wow.
I'm eating the extra postage. And
well, what if I ordered something from the U.S. from your shop? And you would have to would you charge obviously more for foreign postage?
Well, I charge what it costs me.
Okay,
I don't have a blanket rate. I find out what
so
it costs and I send it.
But
to
your
you.
Retail. Without the postage, would be the same as a U.S. shop.
Retail in my shop is exactly what you would pay.
In the U.S.
It is the manufacturer's suggested
retail price.
Yeah.
In the U.S. or Canada,
whether it's
wherever
Canada,
it is.
U.S., whatever.
And so if I had to pay for postage, I'd be better off obviously buying something in the U.S.
Probably.
And likewise, people in Canada would be better off buying it from you because they'd be paying Canadian postage. Rather than
generally, yes.
Okay.
Generally. But all I'm saying is, whoever you buy it from, now the price is all the same, except for now the big discounters who've come in, like Amazon and, you know, some of the other ones.
Now, those guys, though, you think are getting it from China or rip-off people, or they really don't care where it's coming from, it's all just bottom-line dollars?
No, what it really is now different business models. When you have a brick-and-mortar shop, I've got an overhead. I've got to pay that overhead every month.
Mm-hmm.
The overhead is, you know,
X dollars.
A fair bit
sure.
because I'm in a tourist area.
Mm-hmm.
I have magician demoers. I'm paying X amount on, you know, over and above.
It's not just you and your family. You got to pay somebody else who has to make a living and pay for their personal rent.
At least part of their living. Well, yeah, yes, all sure. of my guys are part-time, but yeah. But yeah. Some of these discount shops, they don't have an actual location. They don't have a shop. What they have is an office.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get...
They drop ship.
They get orders. They... There's one company that's very close to Murphy's, which is the main wholesaler.
Right. Jobber, actually.
Yeah. They
job to wholesalers.
Well, what they do is this particular company, who I won't name,
right.
basically gets up in the morning, they have their orders, they call over to Murphy's, they say, I need four of these and two of those and four of those. They pick it up, they package it, and they send it. Now, the thing about that is...
To the retailer.
No, to the customer.
Oh, directly.
Yeah.
Who had ordered
they
on
are,
the internet.
They are an internet marketer.
Marketer, right.
So, they're in an industrial area, so their rent is very cheap. They don't have an actual shop, so they don't have any actual stock. They buy
it's a virtual store.
In the morning
mm-hmm.
to ship it out in the afternoon. So, consequently, they're able to offer lower prices because they don't have nearly the overhead of an actual shop.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not getting the person who's saying, no, that's not going to suit your act. Or, you know what? This piece of equipment, it's not really well made. The ads are kind of misleading. So well, you're losing that side of it.
Well, you're talking about a specific, without naming names, you're talking about a specific online retailer.
Yeah.
All are the same. It doesn't matter whether it's that particular retailer or any other retailer online, as opposed to a brick and mortar. That only at a brick and mortar where you can personally talk to somebody.
Sure.
You know, do you get that kind of interaction where that you can learn something and find out, you know, what it is that you need for your show, mm-hmm. you know, and get kind of some personal instruction. I mean, it's like a private lesson, if you will. It's like,
absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about, like if somebody walks into your store who you may not know, you know, he's going to want this or that. You're going to say, well, what have you done before? I'm sure that you kind of get to know this person.
I try to, sure.
Well, yeah, to say, well, you know, yes, this cup and ball is good for you, but have you ever bought magic before? Is this your first one? I mean, do you know what a thumb tip is? If they're actually, what is that, you know? And so I would think that you would direct them.
This thumb tip you speak of, what is this?
Some sort of rubber thing that was in yeah. Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would think that you would try to, just as Mickey Hades had told you so many years ago, direct mm-hmm. a neophyte magician into something that would be best for his
I sure try
future
to.
Career.
Absolutely.
That you can't get to any online type, even
not
if you're sending emails.
Not
yeah.
that I've seen. And yeah. and don't get me wrong, I don't hate all online.
No.
And
we're not bashing them at
and
all.
And I think some of them may try and offer that. I don't know. I don't know how it's possible in that format to do that. But in a real shop, a brick and mortar, that's part of the deal.
Right.
You know, it's our job to try and guide, to try yeah. and help, to try and assist, and to try and weed out the crap stuff that's coming out. That was the other side of what I said a little earlier, that I would leave that for a second. The magic biz has changed dramatically, even in the 7 years I've been involved. It used to be that there, you know, really, as far as new props coming out, many of them were magicians that have been around the world, they've been performing, they've had a career, and they're finally allowing things out. You know, some of their personal babies
right.
out to the magic world. Now the vast majority of the magic sales, the new tricks
right,
coming up,
right.
are guys, many of them who've never actually performed, or at least haven't really done a lot of performing. Their career is coming up with things to sell to magicians.
Their job is to sell to magicians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? And so a lot of the new effects coming out, and there are every day, every week, there's new stuff coming out. I don't want to disparage, because there's some really cool stuff coming up.
Oh yeah, there is.
But there's also a lot coming from people that have no real understanding of
commercial
performing, audience.
Yeah,
you know, professional.
Well, you know,
and you know, I don't mean to say that they don't have a valid viewpoint.
Sure,
but it's a very, very different viewpoint from 5, 6, 8 years ago.
Well, a lot of stuff, in my opinion, it seems that are what's considered to be street magic. You see these videos of, like in Las Vegas, they're standing on some sort of a bridge, you know, overlooking the street, you know, the downtown or whatever, and they're showing people who are late at night and, you know, had a lot to drink or whatever, you know, having great reactions. And so it seems that those are not realistic in the type of environment where you can actually make money doing that. These are, when I say street magic, they're doing some street magic type of stuff, but it's not like, for me, doing corporate magic. It's like, well, I think maybe that some of those things might work in for my clients, but for the most part, you know, I don't think that those are tricks that will work to make money for you. If you just want to get some cred, some street cred, you know, you can do this on the street.
If you want to do a cool stunt that you can film with your camera phone and put it on YouTube.
On YouTube.
Absolutely.
That won't make any money, but will give you some street cred, like I said.
Right.
Then, yeah, on YouTube.
But as far as performing in a professional environment.
Yes.
As a professional,
yes.
There's a lot of stuff out there that just doesn't apply anymore.
There you go. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you sell those kinds of things? I guess you have to, certainly in order to be a commercial retailer, you have to have those kinds of, you know, when David Blaine had done the levitation, you were probably selling videos of for his...
That was a little bit before I bought the shop.
Okay.
For the most part, I don't carry that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I made a decision when I bought the shop that this was a shop for, A, rank amateurs, you know, people just getting going.
So not professionals like Denny, any kind of a thing.
No, I'm talking about like just the kid off the street, because we're a tourist area.
Oh, that's true.
So I wanted a good selection of things that a beginner would get something from. But then I also wanted, if we're in a cruise ship town, so if a magician was on a cruise ship and lost his act, I wanted to have the stuff that they could come in and it wouldn't be the same act.
Sure.
They might not get exactly what they wanted.
Have you had that happen?
Yeah, once or twice. Mm-hmm. But I've got enough pro-level stuff that they could create an act from.
Okay.
So, having said that... yeah, I do occasionally get someone coming in and saying, I want, you know, this or that does this thing with your arm and, you know, blood and,
The needle through there.
Okay, if you need that, I can order it in.
Yeah.
But it's not stuff that I have on the shelf regularly. I have limited space. I can only bring so much.
So you do have people come in from time to time and say, I'm looking for X, do you have that?
Sure. And I've got, you know, like some of my guys, some of the regulars in Victoria, they'll call me up and say, you know, I found this thing and you don't have it. I know because I asked. And they're offering at a certain price on a certain website. Can you match it? Can you do it? Can you bring it in? And so whether it's price-wise or just the content of a thing that maybe isn't a normal thing I'd carry.
Right.
For customers, I'll do that. Sure, I'll bring it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll, you know, match whatever price that we have to make it work for you.
But that's not something you do on a regular basis.
I just don't. I don't have the space
for
everything new that comes out. I got to be really picky about what we get in.
How do you select what you're purchasing?
You
talked about, you know, going to Murphy's site and watching a video or whatever. But I mean, do you look at Genie and Magic and see the reviews and? Or just something you've seen or heard or people are talking about they come and ask for? Or how do you determine what you're going to
all
buy?
All of the above.
Okay.
You know, I try and keep a handle on what the magic world is saying. I, you know, look on Murphy's constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And Funink and Loftus and Robbins and, you know, all the main suppliers. And I try and keep a handle on, you know, what's coming out, what's new, what is available.
Right.
As a full-time performer for a lot of years, I think I have some insight into what really is going to work. So I discount some of that right away.
Right.
Because you can see some of them that, you know, okay, it looks great from that angle with that camera edited that way. But, you know, as far as anyone actually performing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I do try and keep an eye on the forums and stuff. Although I got to admit, because I'm also a full-time performer, it's really hard.
I would think it'd be difficult to keep up with it all.
I don't have the time of the day.
Does Teresa then look at it or?
No. The ordering stuff is up to me. So having said that, I mean, Teresa is, she's a wonderful secret weapon to have.
Yeah.
As far as the show side of things that we do. I mean, she, everything we do, she's heavily involved in, and in the shop. I mean, she's great at helping with the structure and the running of the shop. Just she's not going to be the one to pick which tricks are we order in, you know.
Well, to kind of wrap up over here then, tell me what kind of recommendations you would have for youth or young magicians. I mean, as to how you got started or getting into stage or close-up or what they should do as far as close-up, a retail magic shop, things they should buy, what should they do, what should they study? What recommendations would you have?
Wow, you don't have enough time. 2 hours. Wow.
I'm going to break this up, I think, into a couple episodes.
Okay. I would have to say the one thing that I would recommend to young magicians is something I probably would not have listened to myself when I was a young magician.
Mm-hmm.
But one, search out old magicians. And I guess I did. I had my mentor.
You did.
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
Search out people that have been there before. The material that you do might be different. It's a different era. I get that. But there is so much that these people have experienced that they might be able to save you some mistakes, some time.
Hmm. Learn from their mistakes.
Absolutely.
And also from their successes.
And be willing to listen. I mean, that's a hard one.
Wow.
I think that's a hard one for all of us.
Yeah.
One of the things in my notes is the more honest you can be with yourself, the quicker you will progress, the better you will be. We all want to think that we are going to be, now, depending on your age, lots of us years ago wanted to be David Copperfield and Lance Burton.
Mark Wilson. Doug Henning, whoever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nowadays, maybe you want to be Chris Angel.
Yeah.
Or David Blaine.
Right.
Or
Dynamo,
you know,
whoever.
The fact is, the more honest you can be with yourself, you have to look at everything about yourself, what you look like, what you act like, how others perceive you, how you perceive you.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, I say when you're trying to define your show, you've got to define your character. How do you define your character? Well, you sit down and you write a list of things that you believe about yourself. But then you have your friends do the same thing. And then you compare notes.
Mm-hmm.
The more you're willing to accept that maybe they don't see you the same way you see yourself, the more you are able to start to get into, okay, if that's how they're perceiving me, then that's maybe my character needs to move that direction. Look at someone like Matt King. I think Mac is a wonderful magician and a prime example of amazing character development.
Mm-hmm.
If Mac, when he was just getting his poop in a group, if he decided that he was going to try and be Lance Burton, a tuxedo, birds, trying to be serious and suave up there, it wouldn't have worked.
Right.
And he wouldn't be where he's at. But he took who he was, he exaggerated some of it, and created this kind of country bumpkin guy in the
character,
the loud suit and all of that.
Right.
As I put in my notes, if you're 8 feet tall and stick thin, you're not going to play a romantic leading man,
true,
magician. You're not going to be Copperfield.
That's what Jason Alexander had told me years ago. He was performing at the Mindvention. Jason Alexander being the one who played on Seinfeld show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he was saying, I'm never going to be a romantic lead.
Yeah.
You know, he's always going to be George Costanza.
Totally.
Yeah. And so you just have to recognize who you are.
Totally. And not just who you are, but who other people see you as. And again, the more honest you can be, the quicker...
you have to be honest.
The quicker to the prize, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have much better chance of doing that. Other than that, in my opinion, select magic that is simple, effective, powerful, and give it great story, plot, reason, music, drama, you know? You don't have to be able to do a 16-phase, multi-cut, spinning,
yeah,
you know, this and that. There's nothing wrong with learning a perfect classic pass. But you know what? I've seen about two in my lifetime. Learn how to do simple magic that works,
mm-hmm,
every time from any angle. And you know what? I think you're going to be more successful than chasing the ultimate, most difficult, incredible thing in the world.
Right.
Strive for that, but just be a great performer.
Wow. Great advice. Well, okay. The last question is, since my podcast is called The Magic Word, my question is, what is your magic word? It's not something that's like necessarily abracadabra, maybe, but it could be something that's just a credo you live by.
Wow. I wish you gave me these questions beforehand so I could have thought about them. I guess my magic word would just be honesty.
You know? Honesty.
Yeah. Be that's honest good. With yourself.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. You know, we have spent some time here, and you guys have benefited from the knowledge over here of Murray Hatfield. And I want you, first of all, or rather at the very end, to at least give us your website and also where they can order things, I guess, through Murray's Magic Shop. I mean, you got a couple of websites or ways they can contact you?
My site is murrayhatfieldmagic.com. And that's just Teresa and I and our performing. Our domain for our shop is magictrick.com. Just magictrick.com.
Magic Trick.
Yeah, singular.
Well,
there is another magictricks.com. That's
that.
Not us. We're magictrick.com.
Singular.
Yeah. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter.
And to find you on Facebook, that's just
Murray Hatfield.
Murray Hatfield?
Yeah.
It's not, okay. Great. Thank you very much, Murray. You've given us a lot to think about over here. I hope everyone has enjoyed the show. Thank you for being my guest tonight, and also for the wonderful lecture you've given earlier this evening.
Oh,
and the lecture you gave us the last couple hours over here, too. That's been great. Thanks
awesome.
Again. We'll see you. And for now, this is Scotty out.